We are in our last Sunday of the year, and this being our 50th anniversary, I mentioned this many times, of course, but we thought it'd be nice to go through and just thought put together 50 Baptists that I think everybody should know, and we're not going to get all the way through. This is number 41, I believe. So there are a couple Sundays, like last Sunday, like we don't have Sunday school, so we can't give Baptist history that day. So we will finish this up in January and February, but I hope it's been as good for you as it has for me. I just have enjoyed this. You know, many of these things I know, of course, and we've taught them over the years, but really what a wonderful thing to go back and review some of these great men of God and great men and ladies of God and what God did through them. And this morning, I want to look at a man that we probably don't know much about. He's a man that preached in the 20th century, of course. We're there now. And I want to spend a lot of time actually on his conversion because I think it's unique. But this morning I talk about Hyman Appleman, and probably in the last 100 years there have been few evangelists whose ministries have been as effective and far-reaching as this converted Jewish man. His endeavors in the 1940s really generated enthusiasm for evangelism that had been forgotten since the day of Billy Sunday and Bob Jones Sr. But he was born in Mogilev, Russia, of Orthodox Jewish parents in 1902. He was reared and trained in Jewish in the Jewish faith, of course, raised by a strict grandfather and grandmother. One time as a boy, he was thrown from a horse, and the horse stamped on him and almost killed him. He was in sort of kind of straitjacket for weeks and weeks, and he says he always remembered the day it was taken off and what relief that was. He later described his salvation experience as the same type of relief from the bondage of sin. That was interesting. His father came to America first for about 18 months. Then his mother and he and his three younger brothers came in 1914. Of course, Hyman knew Hebrew, and he had a pretty good command of German, Russian, Yiddish, and Polish. Now he had to learn English. So they had come to Chicago. He enrolled in Hans Christian Andersen Public School in Chicago. And here was a 13-year-old boy, 150 pounds, sitting in the first grade class, in the first grade desks, learning the American school system. He did, and despite the handicap, he learned the new language, and he went through the first 8 grades in about 2 years and then went on to high school. Eventually, he enrolled in Northwestern and DePaul University. There received his undergrad and graduate degrees in law. Then he practiced law very successfully from 1921 to 1925. He was not a religious Jew. He attended the synagogue 3 times a year. He was engaged to marry a Jewish girl. He did not drink or gamble, but he had no real interest in the scripture, of course, especially not the New Testament. And this type of life, hard-working, really a workaholic, and with no satisfaction from the Lord, really started to grow really uncontent in his heart and really unhappiness because he could not find any satisfaction. He tried to draw more and more from work, and again, I said, you know, he became a workaholic and just worked night and day. In the fall of 1924, he almost had a physical breakdown because he was working so hard. One night when he came home, there was a family conference convened with actually his physician, his family, and his law partner, and they all said, you gotta stop. You gotta take a break and head west, or there's family out west, head west and take an extended vacation. So he did, and he went to Kansas City. His first stop was in Kansas City where he knew some relatives. And as was the custom really of the day, not unusual for travelers, he went to the YMCA where he was staying. That night he met an elderly man who knocked on his door later in the evening and introduced himself as a reporter for the Kansas City Star. His name was Daly. And Daly proceeded to witness to Hyman Appleman for over an hour and a half. That he had never heard that before, and he closed his door after that man left, and he saw a Gideon Bible on his nightstand, and not knowing anything about the Bible, he did turn to the New Testament. He read a couple chapters of the book of John, put it aside. But the next morning, someone knocked on his door there at the Y and invited him to go to Sunday school with him. And he didn't have the heart to say no, so he went along. He went to a Methodist church with that man, and he said he endured the service. It made no sense to him, but he went to church that morning. But his health continued to decline. He moved on to Denver, staying at the YMCA. He asked where he could find a doctor, and someone directed him to a pastor across the street. So he went over to that pastor. He sat down with him, and they talked for 8 or 9 hours that night. He said that the preacher eventually said, you don't need a doctor. You need the Lord Jesus Christ. And Affleman just drank in the gospel as the pastor gave it to him. At that point, the preacher dropped to his knees. He put his arm around Affleman and he began to pray with a broken voice and tears coursing down his cheeks. The devil was losing the fight. And the main fight within Affleman was, of course, that his brothers and sisters and his parents, all being Jews, would have their hearts broken. He knew that he would probably be shunned from his family. But as that pastor prayed, he just refused. That pastor said later, he refused to surrender this man's soul to the enemy. And Affleman, upon hearing Romans 10:9, he said, "What? Explain that to me." And finally he prayed this prayer, and he's written it down for us. And I think it's good to hear these prayers. But he said, "Lord, I do not know and I do not understand, but this man says and this book says that your son died for my sins. And if I ask you to, for his sake, you will forgive my sins, Lord. I do believe this, and for Jesus' sake, do forgive my sins." What a wonderful prayer. And he stood to his feet and he said, "What do I do next?" And the pastor, who I don't even believe was a Baptist, said, "Well, you need to be baptized." And so that next Sunday service, he publicly confessed Christ and was baptized. He walked immediately to the nearest Western Union Telegraph office, and he wrote his parents, and he said, I'm a Christian. I've been baptized. I've joined the church. I'm praying for you." And he was 23 years old at that point. Well, the reply came back, "Come on home." His conversion naturally began to stir quite a bit in the Jewish circles where his parents were here in Chicago. Several weeks later, he did not go home immediately, but he received a telegram from home saying that his mother was dying. So he immediately took the first train home. But when he arrived, he learned that his father had just made that up to get him home. His mother was not dying. He pleaded with Hyman to reconsider his ways. Of course, Hyman refused. And his father, with indignation and anger, said, "When your sides come together from hunger and you come crawling to my door, I will throw you a crust of bread as I would any other dog." This was devastating to him. The devil used this to really tear him up. And he took the first train east. He stopped, I think it was in New Jersey, worked there for a while. He was so depressed about his life and it began to backslide that he decided that he would just commit suicide and go to heaven. He decided he'd come back to Chicago. He'd swim as far as he could into Lake Michigan and just drowned. Not sure if that's the greatest way to do that, but anyway, so that's what he thought. On his way back to Chicago, he stopped in Washington, D.C. The train had a layover. And through a series of certain events, Lord led him to a chaplain who helped him in his backslidden state. And at the same time, then he began to teach in the Sunday schools that the YMCA would hold on some Sundays. He eventually was to get involved with a Baptist church, and it was there that he met a young lady he would eventually marry. And by 1930, this is 5 years later, he actually accepted a call to pastor a small church. That year, he also married Verna Cook, and he was called to the ministry, so he went to Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth. And was there from 1930 to 1933, where he received his theological training. His wife also attended the same seminary. And then for a time he pastored until 1933. In December of 33, he was asked by the Southern Baptist Convention to be the statewide Texas evangelist. And so he did that for a number of years. He held that position faithfully, ministering over those 8 years to churches there in Texas. But he felt the Lord wanted him to be independent, and he launched into single church citywide crusades across the country. And because of his ability to speak in so many languages, now he spoke in 7 or 8 languages, he began to also spend time almost every year in foreign countries. In 1942, he held his first large crusade in Philadelphia. And it was at this revival that several churches asked him to come to. He preached for 3 weeks and saw the salvation of some 2,700 souls with 5,000 decisions. His meetings would then, over his, the course of his career, take him to over 42 states. And as I said, many, many countries around the world. God richly blessed, and thousands were saved under his preaching. Again, in the 40s, he traveled to Australia. That was his first big meeting, I think, across the seas. He spoke there for 6 months with 9,000 decisions for Christ, 7,000 people joining Baptist churches there in Australia as he preached. He had meetings in Great Britain, several countries in Europe, later Mexico and Central America. Later he would go back to his home country and preach in Russia. Saw hundreds and thousands of people saved in these meetings. This is the day of the 20s and 30s and 40s where these massive campaigns and the Lord just using these men to see so many saved before World War II. These are numbers that had not been seen since the days, as I said, of like Mordecai Ham and Bob Jones Sr. But as he preached, you know, he was just, again, almost the same workaholic that he was as an unsaved man. His schedule is breathless as they talk about, you know, all that he did, preaching 50, 51 weeks out of the year. As at the end of his career, before he died, someone tallied that he had seen 345,000 decisions for Christ, some 270,000 people saved, baptized, and joining local churches. Just an amazing, amazing ministry. I'll just skip ahead here, but he wrote 42 books. I think I mentioned, or I have a picture of one of the books that were really compilations of his sermons, which you can still buy today. Very interesting, very fascinating preacher. He spent his last years as a member of Red Bridge Baptist Church in Kansas City. Went to be with the Lord in 1983. Doesn't seem that long ago, but 1983. And Lee Robertson, a dear friend, said this. He said, "The first time that I listened to him preach, my heart was stirred by his fervor, his zeal, and his passion for souls. Through these years, I have watched the records of his revival campaigns. For 35 years, there has been a statement of his zeal and concern for the souls of men. He is a true friend, a gracious brother, and a mighty preacher." And so this morning we want to thank the Lord for this very unusual man that God saved out of Judaism and used in a great way across the world, Hyman Appleman.